I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. A new report by the national nonprofit, the Corporation for Enterprise Development, finds that more than half of Baltimore families are financially vulnerable. This means a sudden job loss or medical emergency could knock them below the poverty line. Furthermore, half of the city's households struggle to borrow money affordably, so they risk becoming trapped in debt by high interest rates. Arohi Pathak from CFED helps us compare the snapshot of Baltimore to Maryland's overall picture. Plus, Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, lays out policies with the potential to help low-income families, including ways to give them recognition for paying their bills on time. It's Midday, right after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks so much for joining us. Today, we're getting back to the issue of who's included in the functioning financial economy and who is left out. A new report by the national nonprofit, the Corporation for Enterprise Development, or CFED, reveals how financially vulnerable most Baltimore residents are, and to some degree, many residents elsewhere in Maryland. More than half of the city's households are what CFED calls liquid asset poor. That means if something interrupts their income, they do not have enough savings to live above the poverty line for 3 months. One out of every two households in Baltimore has subprime credit, meaning they do not have a high enough credit score to borrow money at affordable rates. And about one out of four households doesn't have a credit report or score at all. For them, traditional borrowing is pretty much out of the question. For those who don't have savings and can't borrow at affordable rates, making ends meet becomes much more difficult. As they face high interest rates, it can mean a cycle of poverty. Today, how Baltimore's economic profile compares to that of the state and the country, why so many are trapped living paycheck to paycheck, and what policy solutions have the potential to build stability for low-income families. Here with me in the in Studio A is Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign. That's Creating Assets, Savings, and Hope, Cash. The Baltimore Cash Campaign is a nonprofit that works to increase the financial security of low-income individuals and families by providing direct services and working with a coalition of foundations, nonprofits, and community-based organizations. Welcome to Midday, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me, Sheila.
And also with us is Arohi Pathak, Project Director for the Corporation for Enterprise Development's Office of Field Engagement. The Corporation for Enterprise Development is a national nonprofit based in Washington that focuses on increasing financial security and expanding economic opportunity. Thanks so much for coming in, Arohi.
Thank you, Sheila. It's great to be here.
Arohi, why did CFED decide to conduct this deep dive into the city of Baltimore? Mostly you look at the financial profiles of states, don't you?
We do, but we also do look at local data. And what we found in looking at local data that CFED produces is that there are a lot of urban areas like Baltimore that are very financially fragile. As you mentioned, in Baltimore, more than 50% of the families lack the savings that they need to live above the poverty level for more than 3 months if they were to suffer an income disruption. When families lack a financial cushion, they're unable to invest in their futures. They aren't saving for things like education, home ownership, or retirement, things that create hope and opportunities for their families.
So you it sounds like you had a pretty good hunch what you were going to find, the broad picture. So what particular data did you go to find out exactly what was going on in Baltimore?
Well, the data profile that we put together for Baltimore is on our website at www.familyassetscount.org.
And we will link to that from the Midday page at WIPR.org.
Great, thanks. And I would just say that the data that is in this profile really points to the level of financial insecurity in Baltimore. And this is part of an initiative that CFED is doing in conjunction with City Community Development and our partners in Baltimore, Baltimore Cash Campaign, to really start a conversation about the importance of building financial security and economic mobility in Baltimore and turning the data into action. And so I'm actually going to ask Sarah Johnson to share a little bit more about what the plans in Baltimore are to spur this conversation around building financial security.
Yeah. Well, we were thrilled that CFED was willing to take their expertise and do a deep dive to look at the data in Baltimore. And I wouldn't say that we were all terribly shocked, but I think having this data is really powerful to put it in the hands of advocates and policymakers to really think through what we need to do to make this data say something different in a year, in 5 years, in 10 years. We are launching an initiative. I've met with all of our coalition partners, and we've been talking about when is the right moment, I think, to really approach policymakers at the city level to do something different around financial security and financial inclusion. And we feel like now is a really good moment. We've got a new administration coming in 2017. And so we're doing the groundwork now with the power of this data and our coalition partners to educate folks around Baltimore City from all different, you know, walks, I think, can learn from what other cities are doing. We're hosting a convening tomorrow at the Annie E. Casey Foundation. We still have room if people would like to attend. They can go to our website, which is baltimorecashcampaign.org, and register. We've brought in experts from the Cities for Financial Empowerment Fund, which is a big national group that does financial empowerment at the municipal level all over the country. And we've brought in folks from Miami and Delaware. And then we also have the director of the Mayor's Office of Employment Development here in Baltimore City, Jason Perkins Cohen, joining us. So we're going to have a panel discussion to learn about what other cities are doing that are really infusing policy strategies within municipal, sort of the municipal government, to promote financial inclusion and financial security. And so we'll be releasing this data as well as educating people.
Yeah, and I want to ask you more about what those policies may be. Let me just remind folks, that's Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Arohi Pathak, project director of field engagement for the Corporation for Enterprise Development. We're talking about financial inclusion and exclusion. Have you struggled to save money? Are you hit with high interest rates because you have poor credit or no credit? If you have questions, this is a good time to join the conversation. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email to midday@wypr.org. Sarah Johnson, you mentioned this is a good moment for the last 11 months or so. When people have talked about this moment in Baltimore, they've often been referring to the unrest in the city, mm-hmm. and what we saw last April that didn't end in a riot, but included a riot, and a conversation that said, look, you have to look at the role that economic exclusion played.
That's right.
In those kinds of forces in West Baltimore. Was that a factor also in either CFED's decision to look so closely at Baltimore's numbers or your decision to try to do this convening?
That's absolutely right. I think trying to leverage this momentum that we have right now while we're focusing on what came out of a lot of the dialogue after the unrest was people needing jobs, youth needing jobs, people needing help with their finances. And I think we've been really impressed to see the level of investment from philanthropy as well as federal government in jobs programs. I think what we want to see more is than just we need more than just training. People need help, and we say both sides of the balance sheet. People need, yes, we need job training, we need good jobs, but we also need that just-in-time financial education and financial support so that people can do something better with those paychecks so they're not getting ripped off. Making sure they've got good financial products is one piece of it. Certainly, there's a role at the table for financial institutions to play to make sure we've got the right types of products, but people also need the right type of education and support to really turn the curve on their finances.
Let me ask Arohi whether you can bore a bit into the income side of the picture. I mean, what did you find the income picture in Baltimore compared to other places you looked at, or if you can compare it to the state of Maryland?
Sure. So what we found in Baltimore is that 55% of the population, or one in two households, is liquid asset poor. Not surprisingly, the data also shows that communities of color tend to have a high percentage of people who are liquid asset poor.
And that's a real nonprofit report phrase, liquid asset poor. People on the street don't say, hey, I'm liquid asset poor. What do you really mean? And what does that feel like to people?
Thanks for reminding me about that. That's exactly right. So liquid asset poor refers to the households who do not have enough savings to live above the poverty level for more than 3 months if they were to suffer an income disruption of some sort. So if they were to lose their job, have high medical bills, or sometimes it can even be something as simple as just having high car repair bills for a couple of months. These are households that are literally one emergency away from a financial disaster.
And some people hear that and say, this is just another phrase to mean low income. They don't have enough income.
They don't have enough income. That's exactly right. But a lot of these people are working people. Mm-hmm. These are people that go out, work every day, have a paycheck, and they're just not able to stretch their paycheck from month to month or from week to week in some instances. And it really tells a story about our economy. And even though our economy is bouncing back, for too many people, their paychecks are just not bouncing back in the way they need to see and the way they need to be able to take care of their family's mm-hmm. needs.
And this actually goes higher than this poverty in liquid assets actually goes higher than very low income.
Right? Yes, it does. And in fact, if you look at liquid asset poverty by income, I have some data to share with you. 62% of households in Baltimore earning below $50,000 a year are seen as liquid asset poor. And this is not particularly surprising. We expect to see those low levels of savings for those making $50,000 a year. But what is surprising is that even households making near the median income in Baltimore City, which is about $70,000 a year, more than 40% of those households in Baltimore are liquid asset poor. So what this tells us really is that there is a wide range of income instability and income insecurity in Baltimore, even amongst a range of income levels.
You've just mentioned car repairs a minute ago. About one-fifth of Baltimore families don't have a car, and homeownership rates in the city are about 20% lower than statewide and national mm-hmm. rates. What kind of effect does this have on the net worth of families here and their ability to cope with crises?
So one of the issues that actually I should talk about before we talk about home ownership is the lack of credit or the lack of access to affordable credit for too many families. I think about 50% of the families in Baltimore, 50% of the adult population in Baltimore has subprime credit, which means that these consumers have credit scores that are really too low to get decent interest rates. So when we look at home ownership rates, part of the reason why home ownership lags particularly for low-income families in Baltimore and in communities of color in Baltimore, is because a lot of these families are not getting interest rates on mortgages that they can afford. And oftentimes, actually, there's some data that I would like to share with you. It's about the percentage of homeowners who are cost burdened. In Baltimore, 40% of homeowners are cost burdened, which means that mortgaged owners spend 30% or more of their household income on housing costs.
You define it as a burden if it's more than 30% mm-hmm. of your income.
Right. And a lot of those people are burdened because they can only qualify for subprime loans.
Right.
And so they're paying really high mm-hmm. interest rates. And instead of being able to save that money towards other things like retirement or education, they're spending 30 to 40% of their income on household costs, which is an enormous amount.
And I just want to clarify, in the asset building field, which is sort of how we professionally talk about the work that we're doing, we really believe that credit is an asset. So it is important that people have good credit, and because it gives them access to lower fee products, right? So they can make sure they're saving their money and use their money wisely. As you mentioned, a lot of people in Baltimore City are renting. So that good on-time rent payment often is not helping to build their credit score because it's not reported to the credit bureaus. So we've been working with the Credit Builders Alliance, and there's actually an interesting program here in Baltimore City. It's AHC Greater Baltimore and their housing group. And they have been part of a pilot program across the country, one of only eight actually, that is reporting on-time rent payments for their tenants to help them build credit. So this is an example of a strategy, a policy that Department of Housing perhaps or other landlords could start doing to help their renters build good credit so that people have access to lower fee loans and they can save more money.
Interesting idea. I want to ask you more about it, but we need to take a quick break here. Yep. When we come back, more with Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, and Arohi Pathak, project director of field engagement for the Corporation for Enterprise Development, and your calls and questions. But first, WIPR is getting its finances in order, as we do a few times a year, by turning to our listeners for support. Here's Andy Beanstock. Welcome back to Midday, everyone. I'm Sheila Cast. Are you living paycheck to paycheck? Are you struggling to pay off high interest rates? What misconceptions do you think people have about debt and poverty? Join our conversation. Send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780. We're discussing a new report by the Corporation for Enterprise Development about Baltimore's financial assets. The CFED also has snapshots of all the states showing employment, housing, jobs, education, other data. You can check them out at assetsandopportunity.org/scorecard. We'll link to it at the midday page at WIPR.org. With me to talk about it are Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, and Arohi Pathak, project director of field engagement for the Corporation for Enterprise Development. And we hope you'll join this conversation also. I want to pick up where we left it, Sarah. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, what were we talking
credit.
About?
Credit. Credit as credit. An asset.
Credit as an asset. And you were saying people don't get credit for paying routine bills because
right.
those tend not to be entered into credit reporting. Mm-hmm. But that's not something that a consumer can affect, right? I mean, if your landlord isn't entering your faithful rent payments, there's nothing you can do about it, or is there?
Right. So this is something that is emerging on the marketplace. So there are some places out there that you can, as an individual, sign up to have it, to pay to have it reported to the credit bureaus. But wouldn't it be nice if more landlords were reporting your on-time rental history to the credit bureaus on your behalf? And so that's why it's so innovative that we have this low-income, you know, housing group that's doing it for their residents. In addition to financial education and financial coaching, they really see it as a part of a package to help their residents build their assets and be able to move out of poverty. And with the hope that with improved scores and savings accounts and connection to financial products, they're able to own their own home one day. So I think we really view building credit as a really important piece to people moving out of poverty.
Arohi, let me ask you about the Maryland state profile.
Sure.
CFED does profiles of all the states, and there's Maryland, which you rank number one in its policies. And then in its outcomes, Maryland ranks 22, which is like right in the middle of the pack. Mm-hmm. How can there be such a big disparity between what you say are very good policies that Maryland has set up around consumers and finances and such mediocre incomes?
Mm-hmm. So, as you said, Maryland certainly has adopted some really good policies that help build financial stability. But what the outcome data is telling us that in spite of these policies, too many of Maryland's low-income and working families are still struggling to build their own financial security and their own economic mobility. This is especially true in Baltimore City, where unemployment rates are almost at 8%, where opportunities are very limited, particularly in a lot of neighborhoods. What the data really is telling us here is that there's room for improvement, even though Maryland does rank number one in policy adoptions.
Let me interrupt. I'm sorry to interrupt,
yes.
but it's not clear to me what policies you're talking about. It if they're failing to have very striking impact on outcomes. Point me to
sure.
some of the policies that you say Maryland is doing well.
Sure. So Maryland has some of the policies that Maryland has enacted that are particularly beneficial to low-income people is eliminating the TANF asset test so that more people can actually take advantage of welfare programs. Enacting EITC so that earned income tax credit so that more low income and working individuals have access to that credit. Expanding the Medicaid that was under the Affordable Care Act so that people who are at 138% or more of federal poverty level can also access health care. So those are just some of the examples in terms of the good policies that Maryland has enacted to help really push or improve financial stability or financial security. Mm-hmm. But there are other policies that Maryland could do more on. So, for example, Maryland does not have a refundable child tax credit. That would be something, if they enacted, would be really beneficial to low-income families that have children.
This would be a refund of a part of one's state income taxes?
Yes.
According to the number of children you have?
Right.
And Maryland has nothing like this?
I don't believe, no, it does not have anything like this. And so, and another example, just to give you an idea, is there is no state funding for individual development accounts. These are incentivized savings accounts, and Maryland could potentially start start funding this at the state level, which would encourage more people to save for their futures, like home ownership or education, or even retirement, for that for that matter. And there are, you know, policies around debt collection and around consumer protection that Maryland could do a better job on.
Well, the states that have better outcomes, and I confess I did not take time to try to learn all the states, but the states that have better outcomes, why are their outcomes better? Is it, do they also have policies that rank number one? Or, I mean, what are they doing more than Maryland is doing to get these better outcomes for low-income people?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure that I can completely answer that question, but I think Sarah can, so I'm going to push this over to Sarah.
Yeah, I would say that for some of the states that are doing better in terms of outcomes, one of the things they have that we don't is leadership and investment. I think states that are doing well and municipalities that are doing well are investing in their local tax preparation campaigns like ours, right? They're investing in individual developments accounts. They are creating offices of financial empowerment where there's leadership and attention to what is happening in terms of integrating this work into all of the city services. And I think that's where we hope tomorrow, as we begin to kick off this work group around looking at how do we start a city for financial empowerment here in Baltimore, I think this is where we could turn the curve on some of that data and around our results, so that we're not just number one in policy, but we're also number one in putting those policies into place and really making a difference for people on the day-to-day here in Baltimore City.
That is Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also with us is Arohi Pathak of the Corporation for Enterprise Development. We're talking about bad credit, no credit, other financial situations that make it difficult to move out of poverty or stay there. Are you struggling with bad credit or no credit? Do you feel like debt is holding you back? What's your question or comment for our guests? You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org or call us at 410-662-8780. Sarah, you just mentioned a phrase that I don't think is familiar to most of us. You talked about something good could come of offices of financial empowerment. What is an office of financial empowerment?
Well, an office of financial empowerment, or really spurred out of originally, the Office of Financial Empowerment is up in New York. So Bloomberg many years ago invested in
Mayor
this.
Bloomberg.
That's correct. Invested in this idea of creating more within his one stops, where there was people coming in for employment, for example. So when someone comes in, they receive financial counseling, they receive financial coaching, they get help with the budget, they get help repairing their credit, they get help thinking about their financial future. So again, how can we do more with people's time to support them in different areas of their life? And we see this happen with clients that come to us for free tax preparation. You know, the bulk of our work is really providing free tax preparation to low and moderate income families. But they get more at our tax sites because we embed them within community centers, so they can come in, get their taxes done, and as well as doing job search or other pieces of things that they want to do with their time. So really, an Office of Financial Empowerment means that you have leadership around it, you have a staff around it, you have agreed upon data points that you're tracking and holding people accountable. So it's, again, it's really integration of that work into municipal services.
Arohi, do you see a difference in, Sarah mentioned New York being, I guess, the granddaddy of offices of financial empowerment. Do you see them in other cities or other states, and do you see them making a difference?
Yes. So the Family Assets Count is an initiative that we have in 10 cities, including Baltimore. Baltimore is our last one, as a matter of fact. But the Office of Empowerment, we've seen those happening in cities like Boston, cities like Miami. So there are other cities that are really making an effort to include financial inclusion, financial security in their municipal strategies that really provide services to low income and really any of the working citizens in their cities.
And what tends to be the first thing then that you see by way of improvement in the ability of low income people to manage things? What actually changes when, I mean, a lot of this seems like national forces of how the economy is doing, how high interest rates are, et cetera. It's hard to envision what a local office of financial empowerment could do.
So I think empowerment is the key word there. It really is empowering families to take advantage and to take control of their own financial future. And so we're talking about families that are, earning a fairly low level, but still using whatever they're earning in a much smarter way than they were perhaps before. So they're saving for their future, or they're putting money away into a bank account. They're trying to make their paycheck stretch from one month to another so that they do not have to rely on payday lenders for small dollar loans with really high interest rates. So again, it's really about empowering the individual to take control of their finances and to figure out what it is they need to save up for the future and to save up for their family's needs over a long period of time.
We need to take another short break here. We're going to continue our conversation about managing your finances with Arohi Pathak of the Corporation for Enterprise Development and Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, and with your calls. But right now, a look at WIPR's financial health with a phone number from Andy Beanstalk.
But we hope you won't wait until tomorrow to make your pledge. Do it now. Your pledge supports the news you hear on Morning Edition and All Things Considered, and it allows us to bring you in-depth coverage of this year's presidential campaigns. When you make a pledge, you're casting a vote for quality journalism. Make that pledge now. Call 410-235-1395 or give online at WIPR.org.
The presidential nominations aren't decided by just one vote. On Tuesday after Tuesday, from now through June, there are caucuses and primaries, including Maryland's primary in late April. Week after week, there are winners and also-rans. Slowly, the field thins out to the remaining few that seek their party's nomination. Then it's an all-out sprint to the first Tuesday in November. WIPR is here for you from start to finish and beyond. It takes resources to cover such a long and intense race. Contributions from listeners like you are an essential part of the financial formula. Make a contribution in whatever amount you can right now by calling 410-235-1395 or giving online at WIPR.org.
I'm Steve Ogden, and I listen to WYPR. My very favorite show is This American Life. There was one on office politics that I thought was hysterical, to hear Ira Glass talking about coming to fisticuffs with his boss.
It had been a really hard few weeks, and I walked over and I punched him in the stomach.
And the boss is saying, "Ira, you really don't want to be doing this right now."
Which I have to say, just made me madder. And so I punched him again.
The lesson that you learn is don't punch your boss in the gut. Some of us need to be told these simple things in life, and WYPR is here to tell you these things.
Hard-hitting reporting that tells you what you need to know. This is your public radio. Stay tuned.
And remember this, you've got a chance to meet Ira Glass in person when he comes to Baltimore this Sunday. We've got one pair of VIP passes left to a special event with Ira that we're giving away. These are the last pair of passes to this event. Anyone who pledges today is eligible. Go to WYPR.org to do it or call us at 410-235-1395.
Contributing to WIPR isn't the biggest decision you'll make today, but it's an important decision because it has a big impact. When you support WIPR, you're not just ensuring we'll be here for you, you're also ensuring we'll be here for your entire community. Call 410-235-1395 and make a pledge. In just 2 or 3 minutes, you've done your part to keep trustworthy reporting and great entertainment coming to yourself and to tens of thousands of other folks who tune in every day. Make a big impact on your community with a pledge of just $5 a month. Call 410-235-1395 or give online at WYPR.org.
Your gift in any amount makes you a WYPR member. It helps us keep serving you and your community with the most in-depth coverage of the most important news. Any amount you pledge helps us fulfill that mission. But the best way to give is to become a monthly sustainer. Agree to make a gift of $5 or $10 a month, and you'll never have to remember to renew your membership again. Of course, you'll still be able to change or cancel your membership whenever you like. Become a sustainer now, and you'll also be eligible to get free tickets to next month's Member Appreciation Event at the National Aquarium in Baltimore. So that comes with your pledge at WYPR.org or 410-235-1395. Back to Midday in just a moment. So pledge now to show us that you want to keep hearing it. Go to WYPR.org and become a member or call us at 410-235-1395. Support for WYPR comes from our members, thank you, and from the Modell Performing Arts Center at the Lyric, presenting the classic fairy tale, The Sleeping Beauty, with Maryland's premier professional ballet company, the Ballet Theatre of Maryland, Saturday, March 19th at 7 p.m. For tickets and more information, Ticketmaster.com. This is WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm speaking with Sarah Johnson, director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, and Arohi Pathak, project director of field engagement for the Corporation of Enterprise Development. We're talking about the financial picture of residents of Baltimore compared to the rest of the state. Sarah, if you're concerned about how to begin tracking your debt, this is your chance to ask a question. Are you wondering what resources are available for this tax season? Join our conversation. 410-662-8780 is our phone number, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Sarah, you mentioned a few minutes ago financial coaching.
That's right.
How is that different than counseling?
Well, financial coaching, think of it as just like you would a sports coach. These are the Baltimore Cash Campaign model is we recruit and train volunteers on financial coaching. And so it's a model where you're really a mentor and a partner with someone around helping them reach their financial goals. These are folks that are not in crisis. This model is not necessarily for someone who is about to be evicted. This is usually someone who is working, has some income, and has a financial goal in mind. Many of our folks that we're working with are interested in paying down debt, or they're interested in building their credit or saving money. So for an example, we have a client right now who's in coaching, and she has about $1,500 in credit card debt that's accumulated over the last couple years. It's been medical bills. It's been, you know, various expenses that have come up with car repair, things like that. And she's accumulated this debt and she really wants to pay it down. So she's never tracked her expenses before, and she just needs some help figuring out her budget so she can get these credit cards paid off. Once she gets them paid off, her goal is to save $1,000 for an emergency savings fund. So when the next emergency happens, she doesn't have to rely on these really high fee credit cards. So she's been working with one of our volunteer coaches to track her expenses and figure out how she can little by little pay it down. But when something comes up and she gets off track, she has this person she can work with to really support her. So that's giving her just maybe just being a voice on the phone to be a cheerleader to sort of make those right decisions and give her a pat on the back, or to get back to, let's rework the budget. It's not working. I'm not able to keep up with what I thought my goal was. Let's try and make it manageable. So that's what a coach does.
And is this something that goes on and on and on? Is it a long-term kind of life relationship, or is it like a six-month thing? Or
yeah. So
how is it envisioned?
Most folks are involved in coaching between 3 and 6 months. If they want to go longer, they can. And there actually is a capability to do coaching online through My Budget Coach. So if people are really good at technology and want to work with someone over the internet, they can. But if they're interested in either volunteering as a coach or being coached, they should go to our website, BaltimoreCashCampaign.org, and there's more information there on how to get involved.
How to be a coach. Arohi, is there part of the credit problem that we were talking about that is just due to people just not paying their bills on time? I mean, is this, how much of this is the behavior of the individual person as opposed to the the setting in which they find themselves?
Well, I think it's probably both. You're definitely going to have people who do not pay their bills on time. And oftentimes it's because these people don't have paychecks that they can stretch from one month to another. And so they're scrambling in between paychecks to be able to pay bills or to meet just, you know, some basic expenses like putting dinner on the table every night or affording childcare so that they can go to work. And so, yeah, some of this is definitely a result of personal, you know, inability to pay, to pay something on time. But other reasons are also because they just frankly don't make enough money to be able to meet their family's entire needs. And so if your paycheck only pays you X percentage of dollars a year, but you have more expenses than what your paycheck is going to cover, then, you know, you're stuck. You have no choice but to turn to payday lenders or to turn to places like check cashing services to give you that small infusion of cash to make ends meet while you're, you know, while you're working through paychecks.
The data that you put out about Baltimore indicates that the percentage of households in Baltimore, which have no connection to a formal bank, is about three times what it is statewide. Statewide, it's just under 5%, but in Baltimore, it's about 15%. That would be about one out of six families don't have any connection to a bank.
Right. They do not have a bank account. And so they rely on a pure cash economy. So either they're getting paid under the table or somehow they're being paid in cash, and their expenses and the transactions that they make in order to afford childcare or rent, et cetera, all is in cash as well. But another point that I want to share with you is that there's 25% of house. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. Quarter of the households in Baltimore, or 25%, do have a bank account, but they continue to use alternative financial services like payday loans or check cashing. And this goes back to the point I was making earlier. These are people who basically run out of money between paychecks and have no alternative mm-hmm. but to get a small dollar loan with very high interest rates in order to meet their family's needs. And then what happens in situations like this is because the interest rate on these small dollar loans is so high, you're spending months just paying off those interest loan mm-hmm. payments, and you don't have money that you're saving towards either your basic needs like rent or childcare, or saving for the future like retirement or home ownership or higher education.
And am I reading your data correctly that 25% number for the city is, it's not that much lower for the whole state. It's like 24% for the whole state.
That's right.
So this is a pretty widespread problem.
That's right.
Tony is calling us with a point to make about credit cards. Tony, welcome to Midday.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering about credit cards normally, even though it's like a stopgap measure. Normally, credit cards is not a good way to get out of debt. I was wondering if we could address that.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the very last thing you said, Tony. You're wondering?
I was wondering whether you could address that issue as far as that credit cards are not a good way to get out of debt.
Okay, let me. I'm not sure. I guess we're saying that a credit card is a good way to get out of debt as much as it could be a tool to keep you from getting into it. But let me ask Sarah to address that.
No, I would agree. I would say credit cards are not a way to get out of debt. But having many people are using credit cards, as Arohi was saying, to sort of patch income when they're not able to make ends meet and they maybe don't have a family member they could borrow some money from. And if an emergency came up, they often need a line of credit. And so a credit card is we're being marketed to all the time for credit cards. Every time you go to a department store, they're offering you lines of credit, right? So people are often being bombarded with lines of credit, and people use it to patch their income. But if you have a bad credit score, you're going to be paying much higher interest to use that credit card in emergencies if you need it.
If you can't pay it
That's
off
correct.
By the end
yeah.
of the month. But is a credit card a better way to go if you have one than a payday lender, Arohi?
It depends on the credit card. I suppose there are some credit cards that have exorbitant interest rates and maybe are no better than a payday lender. But the one thing or the one benefit of credit cards is that if you have good credit history, so if you borrow and you pay back in a timely manner, this goes in your credit report and improves your credit worthiness. And so, again, as Sarah mentioned earlier, because credit is an asset, you don't want to take credit cards off the table entirely. You just need to make sure that you use them responsibly and try to pay off the debt that you've incurred so that you're actually building your credit while doing so.
And when you say, Pathak, when you say pay off the debt you've incurred, do you mean pay it off ideally by the before it starts incurring a credit charge, pay it off by the end of the month?
Yes.
Ideally,
you want to pay it off in full if you can to help build your credit history.
So in other words, it still helps build your credit history even if you're not incurring credit charges.
That's correct. So, you know, credit is a really crazy subject. It gets very technical. We're not credit counselors, but I would say if people are looking to improve their credit, paying bills on time, your credit score, 35% of your credit score is made up of just your ability to pay on time and keeping up with those. So by doing that, and again, if you're paying rent or you're paying cell phone or you're paying your, you know, BGE bill on time, that stuff's not being reported to the credit bureau. So again, you're not getting credit for that good payment. But as soon as you're late, or go into default, that's when it reports. So it's sort of flip-flopped in terms of you're not really able to build your credit if it's not being reported. So that's why we advocate for that.
It.
That's correct.
But a credit card, both the good payments and when you get in trouble, all of that is going to be part of
that
your
credit. That does help build your credit history.
Credit,
that's right.
Credit score. Mm-hmm. Sarah Johnson, you've got the Cash Campaign has an event coming up April 2nd with a wonderful name, Money Power Day. What is Money Power Day?
Money Power Day is the region's largest financial fitness fair, and it is going to be on April 2nd. It is free to everyone, and it's all day from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Poly Western High School. This is our 11th year doing the event, and it's really, I don't think we could pack any more in this day. It's everything from a youth zone for kids doing things around finances. There is going to be a small business zone there with people who are experts around small business. We'll have a credit zone there so you can pull your credit report and work with a credit counselor. We have pro bono financial planners who will be there to go over your financial plan. We have about 15 workshops during the day on anything from how to start a small business to planning for retirement. So, or also thinking about a will and trust. We'll have Deborah Owens there and her family will be there talking about family and finances. It's really everything you can think of. Big exhibitor halls you can visit with everyone to learn more about different financial concepts. So we try and pack as much as we can in one day at Money Power Day on April 2nd.
And the April 2nd, of course, is getting close to tax day, April 15th. That's you mentioned a few minutes ago that tax preparation is sort of your mainstay. Tell us real quickly, we have just a couple minutes left. Who is eligible to get help in tax preparation from the Cash Campaign?
We serve individuals or families who made $54,000 or less, and people can make an appointment by going to bemorefreetaxes.org.
Bemorefreetaxes, all one word.
That's correct.
Bemorefreetaxes.org.
That's right. Or they can call 410-234-8008 to make an appointment.
We'll put that on our website. We cannot throw any more phone numbers at you folks.
You
realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so people should get together their W-2s, 1099s, Social Security cards, all that good information, make their appointment, and come to one of our 15 sites in Baltimore City and two in Baltimore County to get their taxes done for free.
What kind of tax questions do people tend to come to you with?
A lot of people are interested in getting those big refunds. And so a lot of times people want to know what they can do with those refunds when they get them. We make sure that people get connected to bank accounts to make sure that they get their money direct deposited. A lot of people are interested in how to save that money. And so we help people purchase U.S. savings bonds, which you can do at tax time, either for yourself or for a loved one. And so we also help people get enrolled in a prepaid card. So for a lot of people, again, who don't have bank accounts or don't want to use them for whatever reason or might be locked out of a traditional bank account, they can have the money direct deposited on these financial instruments. So that it's really protecting the money to get it direct deposited into their account.
Sometimes when people go to private tax preparers, they're encouraged to get their refund faster.
Red flag. Red flag. Big red flag. I would say when you're thinking about selecting a tax preparer, anyone who's promising you big refunds or is going to gauge amount of your refund based on your willingness or amount to pay, that is a huge, huge red flag. We want to make sure people know that our services are really free, and folks might be lured in by a gimmick or some sort of person waving at them on the street to come in and get a refund discount. It's just not true. I think there's a lack of transparency in the tax refund process, and that's really a big problem.
We are flat out of time, and I want to thank you both. This has been an interesting conversation. Sarah Johnson, Director of the Baltimore Cash Campaign, and Arohi Pathak, Project Director of Field Engagement for the Corporation for Enterprise Development. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Sheila.
I also want to thank the DIS for supplying lunch today for midday guests. The DIS is located at 300 West 30th Street in the heart of Remington, on the web at thedisbaltimore.com. And thank you for listening. Tomorrow we'll meet the Green Party candidates running to be mayor of Baltimore, and I hope you'll tune in for that. But right now, this is the next to last day of WIPR's pledge drive, and here's Andy Beanstock with a number to call.